Hey guys, welcome back. My name is Mike Hatch. I am your host, and I wanted to share with you two exciting announcements before we jump into this episode. The first is that I am doing an Empowered Manhood Men's Weekend this September 8th through the 10th. It is based on my book, Manhood, Empowered by the Light of the Gospel, where you'll get to work with myself and other like-minded men to apply the three stages of empowered manhood to your life. So learn what it means to be known by God, grown by God, and owned by God in your specific context. My aim for the Empowered Manhood Men's Weekend is to help you, number one, gain clarity around your identity. Number two, construct a plan for growth by the time you leave. And number three, identify opportunities to fulfill your God-given purpose. So we'll spend the weekend together on a beautiful, secluded 40-acre private property in Clymer, PA, nestled in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. This is going to provide a setting for rejuvenation and inspiration as you gain perspective about your life and what God might be calling you to do. You can check all the details in the show notes below. The second really exciting announcement is that we are doing an Empowered Manhood Israel Experience in September 2024. Once again, the content from my book will provide the lens through which we experience Israel together. So come with me September 3rd through the 14th, 2024, as we go to Israel and rediscover courageous masculinity, where it all began. Registration is open for this trip right now. In fact, if you register before June 3rd, you'll get a $150 discount. You can go to registernow.ittworld.com and then enter Empower24 in the tour code, where you can find out more details about the trip and register. You'll also find these links below in the show notes. All right, let's get into it.
I have a friend who is like husband of the year. Like he went to a woodworking thing and learned to make wood with an old guy who made a rolling pin for his wife for Mother's Day. I mean, this guy makes me sick. Every time he posts on Facebook, I'm like, I'm going to go to my wife's Facebook and unfriend that guy because I'm tired of her seeing how great this guy is. And right. So I thought, well, why don't you just be one? Like, I'm not going to woodwork nothing. I'll go buy you a rolling pin. I'm not going to make one. But why am I... like, that's the guy that I need to be rubbing shoulders with. Like, why not raise that standard?
Hey, folks, welcome back. My name is Mike Hatch. Once again, I am your host and will be joined shortly by my co-host, Chris Bollinger. Today, we are interviewing Jarrett Samuels, a pastor, podcaster, men's discipleship leader. Let's just say that he has a passion to equip and challenge men to raise the standard of what it means to be a man of God. Perfect fit for our podcast, right? So he founded the website, The Pursuit of Manliness, and then, of course, the podcast that coincides with that. It wasn't too long ago that I got to be the guest on his podcast, and now he's going to be a guest on our podcast, because, man, does he have so many amazing things to share with you guys. I think you're going to get, of course, as usual, a ton of value from him, and he is about as real as it gets, too, so you will definitely appreciate that. Of course, in this episode, Jarrett shares his fence post story. Man, there are so many good things and insights that he shares through that, through his story that he learned along his own journey to empowered manhood that I'm really looking forward to you hearing. We also begin the conversation about the difference between being a Christian man and a man of God. And he'll introduce that idea in this first half of our interview, and we'll expand on it further in the second half of our interview. We would love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at mhatch@clchq.org. We'd love your feedback. We'd love ideas. It's been fun getting to meet some of you from around the country, but I know there are some of you out there that still haven't reached out, and we would really love to hear from you. All right, guys, let's jump into our interview now with Jarrett Samuels. Hey, Jarrett Samuels, welcome to the podcast today, man. It's good to have you.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. And I have to thank you for the opportunity. We got to do a podcast swap here where I got to be on your podcast and now you get to be on our podcast. This is one of the things I love about podcasting, the networking, the relationships that are formed through that. It's been phenomenal. And man, you've got an incredible ministry and we're excited to hear more about that. I want guys to be able to go check out your podcast as well, which is, man, you've been doing it for a while now and just incredible value for men. But before we jump into all that, I first want to start out with your fence post story. And just as a reminder for guys who might be jumping on or listening to us for the first time, just imagine a fence that sits along a property, and those vertical posts represent significant moments or people in our lives that make us who we are today. And so, Jared, share a little of a few of your fence posts in your story. We'd love to get to know you a little bit better.
You know, I think back on my life. There were people that God placed in my life that I probably had no business having them in my life. You know, as far as like maybe as a coach or, you know, the first elder at the church I served, there was a guy named John Brashear. He was just a manly man and just really took notice of me, and he gave me a comment. I didn't even know what a commentary was. You know, he gave me a commentary. He gave me, he just saw a guy who needed to grow up, you know, and he never said those words. He just befriended me. So look at that. But one of the most, outside of marrying my wife, you know, and my two daughters, when my son was born to me, that was a pivotal moment. And I look back now 10 years later and think, boy, my life could have went two different ways. And I don't have this figured out, but I'm telling you, it's going the right way. And my wife has said to me, in the last year or so, she's had two different husbands and they're both me. And, she had
no way.
She had the guy she married and she's got the guy now. Now that was not me looking for that. And so the day he's born, this is our third kid. So we kind of had it, we figured out how this stuff works. But the day he's born, you know, they take your kid and they put him in that plastic thing and they flip him around and you're like, man, I'm paying for this. Be careful, you know, and they're flipping and flopping. And the nurse says, I need you to come with me. And we had never had a kid at this hospital. So I don't know what it's a blur. If you've ever had a child, you know, it's all blur and it's 4 a.m, which doesn't help. And we go into this elevator. We go, I don't know where we go, but it's very dark and gray. We go into a room. She pulls the curtain. It's a pretty decent sized room. And she says, just sit over there. It's a hard plastic chair. And again, it's real dark. There's like no lights. And these like nurses start coming in and they start doing stuff to my kid. And I'm thinking, I don't know, man, I'm just trying to stay out of the way. Before long, I realize it's not good. And we were in the NICU. I didn't know where we were at, and I'd never been in the NICU. I didn't have any experience with this. And so essentially the big thing is he had a collapsed lung, and there were some other things that were going on. And so the nurses would talk to her, and she would talk to me, and I would think, okay, you know, I don't have a clue what she's saying. And I'm thinking, where's my wife? Like, where am I? I don't know. It's all just – and so I do what we've all done – a million times. You start throwing out those prayers like fireworks, right? You're just shooting them off. Come on, God, come on, you know what? And I will never forget this as long as I live. I prayed, God, if you help this little boy fight, then I will fight. And I thought to myself, I'm almost having an out-of-body experience here. I thought to myself, that's one of the dumbest things you've ever said. Like, it was almost like I was insulting myself. And I look back and think, there was zero fight in me. I was a Christian guy. I was a pastor. Was a husband, had two daughters, you know, I pretty much was existing with the idea that things will just get better at some point, or, you know, we'll get a new promotion or an opportunity. I don't know what I thought. I was a hard worker. I wasn't running around on my wife or anything like that. I mean, we were providing, but I look back and think, man, I would have been a hard guy to really respect in a way that you said, there was no grit. I needed a wake up call. And unfortunately that was the day it happened. And then about 2 years later, I'm watching my kid. We had this little plastic step, and it's my son. He's putting the ball in the basketball hoop, and I was thinking, this is pretty cool, man, having a kid do what I like to do and stuff. And my daughters didn't have any interest in that stuff. But I've never had this happen. It was as if God himself came, sat next to me. And I remembered those words, God, if you help this boy fight, I will fight. And fear just ran through my whole body. And I thought, oh, we're fixing to get real uncomfortable. This is about to get real. And I don't even know what that – in that moment, I don't know what it meant. I just thought, uh-oh. And I'll tell you what, since that day he was born and then that reminder, God has Rubik's cubed my life. I mean, he took us from – we were from Iowa. I thought it was very comfortable in Iowa. He moved us to a city. I'm not a city guy. I'm a lead pastor now.
You don't look like a city guy, by the way.
I don't even just leave FYI, my house.
If guys are listening to this, you look like you walked off the set of Duck Dynasty, which I absolutely love, by the way. I think you have a great look.
I sometimes look like I'm the homeless guy. Like, we got a rain barrel and some stuff out here. The neighbors look at you like, what are you doing? You know, but I just it was very, like, everything out of my comfort zone, you know? And so through the course of that, I remember texting a friend of mine because my wife was in like this, I want to say it was a weight loss thing, but I don't know. It was like a women's thing where they were on Facebook and they were encouraging one another for something. I don't know. It was a book, a study. I don't know what they were doing. I said, man, it'd be great if there was something like that for guys, because I didn't know of anything. Mm. I wasn't real social media savvy. I'm still not. But and so I remember thinking, what can we do? We could talk. What can we talk? We talk guy stuff, Christian stuff, whatever. And I had a lot of guy friends, but none of us were having like real conversations. We were not having any like, yeah, I know that scares the crap out of me too. You know, or you know what? Mm. I don't know what I'm going to do when, you know, a lot of false bravado at best. So the pursuit of manliness came out of through all this. And I thought, okay, I did it anonymously, and we'll get into that more, I'm sure, but I thought, I'm not the guy for this, but I felt like this should happen. I was sitting in my living room, and my wife was in our recliner, and I said, hey, I'm thinking about starting this thing called The Pursuit of Manliness, and I was going to try to explain to her what it was. Now, I thought this woman's going to get out of the chair and like have a Whoville moment where the Grinch brings all the presents and tree back, and then my kids will dance around me like, hey, our dad has come home. He's here. All right. I'm telling you, brother, she said, well, if you want to practice your – now, let me pause. I had already created the Facebook page, but I didn't have the heart to tell her this was – I was trying to get this going. And she said, if you want to practice your manliness, our toilet's leaking right now. You can try it on that. And I thought, that is not at all what I had anticipated the response to be. But it is. We can say a lot of things, but at the end of the day, it's our actions that are going to, you know, really be the testament of who we are. So for me, that was a big – moment, but I went in with this. I was telling her about this the first time I was ever going to share the story. I had not shared it with anybody, and I was going to Ohio to speak at a men's thing. And I said, "Hey, I'm thinking about sharing this story about our son. It's pretty raw. Like, I don't know, you know." And she's like, "I'll never forget the night that this nurse came in. We only had her one night, and she said, we need to wake this little boy up." Now, I'd had two kids, and I knew when they're sleeping, don't wake them up. Like, leave them. They just let them sleep. And then we're like, we're thinking, no, but we do want to get out of the NICU. We've been there long enough, and we've had our rotations of who's staying. And the nurse said, you listen, he's in this window. It's called failure to thrive. And if he doesn't start waking up on his own and eating on his own, he's not going to make it. And I look back on that, and I totally forgot about that until she reminded me. I look back on that, and I think, brother, that's where I was at. I was in that window of failure to thrive. Like, if I don't start waking up on my own and start eating on my own and feeding myself, I'm going to become a pathetic version of whatever in the next 30, 40 years. And there's nothing to aspire to. There's nothing to want to learn from. I still don't have this figured out, but I do believe God is moving me the right direction.
Wow. That's an incredible story, man. Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. So did you, at the moment in the hospital when you felt like, I forget how you put it. Oh, you made your commitment to God basically at that point. 2 years later, you said, is when you felt like God kind of revisited you, I think is what you said, right? 2 years later?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So did you just kind of put that on the back burner, forget about that, and then all of a sudden God returned?
You know, my memory's not the best, but that does feel like how it happened. You know, I don't remember. Yeah. I remember I don't baby well. And I may make me a bad dad, but I just don't baby well. So I remember trying to, you know, they were sleeping through the night. I had two little girls who were tired of him crying, waking them up. So for me, I don't remember having a moment where I remembered that conversation until then. And how I got to that 2 year window, I don't remember exactly what that was. I don't know. I don't know if I took a picture of my phone in that moment just to remember it, but to me, that's vaguely when it was. So yeah, I don't remember having those types of conversations with the Lord in that window of time.
Yeah. Okay, so then who was maybe it was after the 2 years, but you mentioned before when you first started that you had some significant men who built into your life. Tell us a little bit about who was the I don't know if you can rank them, but someone who was really significant in terms of their influence and investment into your life.
Well, when I look at that ministry in that period of time, there was a guy named Bob Malone. There still is a guy named Bob Malone. He's not dead, but there's a guy named Bob Malone who he was an older guy. You know, I'd say he could be, you know, my grandpa-ish age. I don't know. I'm offended Bob probably now, but he came up to me one time when I first started this church and said, hey, I got a question. My grandson doesn't like to come into this church. He likes to go to another one. Why is that? And I'm the children's pastor and I'm offended by this. I'm like, well, so where is he grandson at? You know, I'm getting all, you know, and so he did it again. I swear. I don't know. Like 6, 8 months later, here comes this old guy walking up and I'm like, I swear if that old guy says that again to me, I'm going to, you know, he does it again. And I said, well, why don't you volunteer for our ministry and figure out what's going on back here? So he started coming. This old guy, I thought, I don't know what we're going to do with this guy. I don't know where we're going to put him. I don't know. Well, he became one of the most genuine friends I still have to this day. I mean, he prays for me every day. We talk to this. I don't live there anymore. And we talk occasionally. I mean, we're in touch. We're in communication. You know, he'll say, hey, our church has done this study. I want you to, you need to look at this. He said, I'll pray for you every single day as you try to start to get guys who are praying for you and stuff. So for me, the encounter with Bob wasn't great the first two times. And I'll tell you, as long as I'm on this planet, he is one of the best guys that I've ever met. He took me, he taught me how to hunt. We'd go to lunch together. I remember him taking me to lunch one time and I sat with two of his friends. They were all like former UPS drivers. And I remember at least having the discernment to think, shut up and just listen. So when these three guys were talking about life and marriage, and whatever, and I'm just eating my greasy hamburger, taking it all in, I thought, what an opportunity to sit at a table with three guys. You know, they're acting like I'm not even there, but I'm absorbing this and thinking, I want this someday. And I have a responsibility to those who come after me to invite them to the table and buy their lunch when they ain't got no money. You know, I didn't have no money. Invite me to lunch. I'm going to buy your lunch and I'm going to let you just listen to us talk about life. I mean, to me, what a privilege that was. I'll forever be indebted to Bob.
Jarrett, you mentioned when you're telling your fence post story about, you know, asking God to make you a fighter, that you need your son to fight and you wanted to be a fighter too. And at the time, you didn't know what that meant. What did it mean? I mean, did you feel like you were just coasting through life, or what were you not fighting for? What were you not in what areas were you not a fighter?
I think, like, for me, a big verse that I go to all the time is 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12. Aspire to live a quiet life, mind your own affairs, work with your hands, and be dependent upon nobody. I think I thought I was a hard worker. I mean, I was lazy or anything, but I was lazy at home. You know, I was very much a sluggard at home. And when I see pictures of myself, I'm like, oh gosh, there's a picture of me right before my son was born. And I thought, I want to punch that guy right in the face. You know, and I don't mean that literally, but I think, man, that guy, he's got a lot of growing up to do and he doesn't even know it yet. You know, and again, I was providing, but when it came to my home life, I was pretty existing. And that probably bothers me more than anything when I see men who are married with kids and say, man, I was there. I sat in that chair. I was covered in the Cheeto dust. I was the guy who lived and died on the results of my teams. And I still love my teams, but man, at the end of the day, I got to love them, my kids more. And I got to, so to me, it started with going back to the Bible, Genesis 1. And I thought, I'm going to read this and I want to look at it different. And I want to look at the men in the Bible different. And I want to look at and so I started doing that. I started reading books about men of God stuff, you know, which was not, some of them were not that enjoyable, but it was because I wasn't ready for it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are not good, but I mean, some of them were like I'm thinking, I can't aspire to that. Boy, I'm not trying to be a carbon copy of Stephen Mansfield or any of these guys. I'm learning from what they're saying. I'm kind of digesting it, processing it. And a big component I realized was I had to get around high caliber men who would not believe my junk, who would call me to a higher standard. And even if they didn't do it verbally, just by their presence, I felt like I needed to grow up. And to me, that was a game changer.
So this theme, I'm going to just mention this theme again, Chris. I know this is probably, I think, the third time I've said this, but I feel like I see this in the last several of our interviews. I've seen this theme among men is that to the best of our ability, we commit ourselves to the Lord or entrust ourselves to the Lord in some way, shape, or form, which is usually a miserable attempt. but then God comes through and shows himself faithful to you or to us, you know, in those moments. And that far supersedes our commitment to him, you know, and you see that demonstrated in your life. So you in a moment said, okay, God, I'm in a desperate situation. If you help my son fight, I'm going to fight as well. And then 2 years pass and God comes back and says, remember? And so God has had a hold of you that whole time. Yeah. He hasn't let you go, right? The whole time. I just love the image of God's faithfulness to us is so much greater than our commitment to him.
I think about Isaiah 46:10, where he says, I'm a God who declares the end from the beginning, and my purpose will stand. And really, if you read that, it's really 9 through 11. It's pretty, you know, God basically says, I'm working upstream and I'm doing things that you can't comprehend yet. But we'll get to the finish line. It's just not probably the way that you're thinking. In that 2-year window, more than likely, my character wasn't ready for any, and I still days feel like I'm not ready for these things. But I think you're always in a season of preparation for what is next. And he's not just going to leave you stagnant. Mm. It's not like the Jesus Coast Guard came by and swooped me up and said, "Here, just sit on the shore. Now your goal is to die the safest." You know, it was like, okay, now let's do something. Let's be. And I don't feel really qualified. Mm. And I say this a lot. Like, I don't feel necessarily qualified to be the authority on anything. I'm just telling you, I've learned some things and I'd love to share some things. And I'm blue collar, regular guy. You know, there's nothing great about me. I think you guys would probably say the same. You just have a call on your heart to say, I need to speak into this. I need, God has laid something on my heart. I want to share this. I want to come alongside you. But not only that, I need guys to come alongside me. And that's kind of how these communities were built. Cause I looked around and thought, who is telling me the truth? You know, who is going to say, hey, man, you're better than that? Or, you know what, like, are you tired of living that? Like, nobody ever said that to me. And so I would surround myself with guys who set the bar so low, we would trip over it. And we're, you know, a bunch of jack wagons, just, you know, like, well, whatever, yeah. You know, whatever, you know, and sending our memes and group text and just whatever. And you're thinking, what are we doing? You know, it's like there's an episode of Seinfeld where he and George are in this cafe, and he looks at George and says, what are we doing? We're grown men. Why are we acting like? And I look back and think, you were such a child. I mean, yeah, that's why I say, I think there's a difference between being a Christian man and a man of God. I think a Christian man just tries not to commit big sins. I don't want to cheat on my wife. I don't want to look like a bad dad. I want to be connected to a church. I was a pastor, for crying out loud, a children's pastor. And then there's a man of God whose presence is just different. Your language is different. Your approach to life is different, and you're a little less unwavering. You know, a Christian guy is kind of like a duck and cover sometimes, you know, and, you know, he's a good guy, but he's not a convicting guy.
Yeah. I read a book a couple years ago about, I think the title was No More Christian Nice Guy.
Yeah.
And his point was that, you know, nowhere in the Bible are we called to be nice. Nice is actually a pejorative term. It's a bad term. Because nice guys are milquetoast. They're, you know, they avoid conflict. They, you know, they set the bar low, like you said. Bible wants, God wants good men, not nice men, good men. And there's a big difference. So I like your visual picture of hanging out with guys with really low bars, because it sounds like that's what you were doing back when you were covered with Cheeto dust. You know, just If you hang out with guys that are not accomplishing a whole lot and setting the bar pretty low, then you can stand out just because your bar is just a tiny bit higher than that. But it's not where God wants the bar to be. And I think that's been a challenge for me and a challenge for a lot of guys is, you know, are you avoiding other guys because they have a higher standard? And if you hang with them, you're weaknesses will be exposed. That's why I tended to isolate for a long time. You know, when you're a party of one, when you're all by yourself, then nobody can compare you to somebody else, right? You're in a class by yourself.
Yeah, or I'm
great point.
I would think, well, at least I'm not that guy. Or I had no problem giving the highlights of some other knucklehead. Like, did you see what so and so did?
Right.
Now, I had a friend. I still have a friend. I keep saying past tense. I have a friend who is like husband of the year. Like, he went to a woodworking thing and learned to make wood with an old guy who made a rolling pin for his wife for Mother's Day. I mean, this guy makes me sick. Every time he posts on Facebook, I'm like, I'm going to go to my wife's Facebook and unfriend that guy because I'm tired of her seeing how great this guy is. And so I thought, why don't you just be one? Like, I'm not going to woodwork nothing. I'll go buy you a rolling pin. I'm not going to make one. But why am I like, that's the guy that I need to be rubbing shoulders with. That's not the knuckleheads who go, well, at least I'm not that guy. You could have married that guy. See what you didn't get?
Right.
Like, why not raise that standard and say, man, we get one shot at this. And there are people in both your guys' lives that God has placed strategically because you get to be an influence on their life. And if we punt on that or allow someone else to take that. We don't get to decide how that plays out. And so I said, well, I got three kids. What a blessing that has been to have three kids. And now I got a daughter who has a boyfriend. We have a whole process there. And I think I told him, I said, whether you're in our life for 5 minutes or 55 years, I have a responsibility to make an investment in your life. I'm not trying to minimize what your dad did or anything like that, but I want you to know there will be intentionality on this end, because I've been a 17-year-old boy. And I'm like, man, somebody should have grabbed me by the earlobe and said, what's the matter with you? But you look around at the other 17-year-olds and you think, well, I'm doing pretty good for myself. You know, again, at least I'm not. That's a bad way to roll. At least I'm not.
Man, I love your perspective. Now, Jarrett, you are a pastor. Is that right? Are you still a pastor, or is this still Pursuit of Manliness full time?
At the time of recording this, I'm still a pastor. No, I'm still there. Yes, I'm still there. I do that full time, and I do this. Yeah. So unless something changes, unless my key doesn't work when I get there today, I'm still there.
As far as you know, you're still a pastor when this airs. Yeah.
I waved the key card and it didn't open. I'm like, well, guess what we're doing full time.
You mentioned you were in children's ministry. Well, are you still in children's ministry or doing something different?
I wish. I was a children's pastor for, man, like 15 years, maybe not that long. I loved children's ministry. I really did. I'm not a lovey guy. I'm not a fun guy, but I loved recruiting people that are fun and lovey, because I wanted these kids to have a great experience. I want them to see Jesus, the whole, you know. And my wife is lovey and fun, which definitely helped a lot. But I thought, we're leaving that. We're going to go, you know, do this. And I remember a guy pulled me aside as we were leaving and said, listen, adults are just like working with kids. And I thought he was just trying to ease my, you know, nervousness. Where they're worse. They're worse than the kids. And so, yes. You know, at least the kids would fake like they're paying attention. The adults, you know, they don't even fake it. So, no, I'm not in children's ministry anymore.
Oh, you're not. Okay. Can I ask you what your role is then? What kind of pastor are you?
Well, I'm the preaching guy, so I'm the lead pastor, whatever title they want to give it. So I preach about 49 out of 52 Sundays a year, and
Wow, mad respect for you, bro. That is no joke. I mean, I guess maybe you get into a rhythm, you know, where you're just kind of used to doing it. But dude, I can't imagine the pressure. Almost every single week to bring something.
Well, in children's ministry, it hit me. It took me a long time. I'm a slow learner, but I said, they could care less what I'm teaching, really. They really could. What they wanted to know was, did you have your check-in people there? Are there small group leaders? Are there supply? Actually, parents don't even care if any of those things are there. Can I just drop my kid off and I'll come back in an hour and a half? So I would just run ragged getting all the tech set up and all these things set up. And there were times I was in the booth and I would look and be like, what's the lesson today? 1 Samuel 13. Okay, I can do that. And go up there and just wing it for, you know. But that's not good. You know, nobody, but I thought they could care less. They could care less about my preparation for teaching these kids for. And so I joke, you know, running vacation Bible schools and things like that. I feel like I can manage a lot of things and kind of, you know, keep things going. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe this sometimes is a lot easier. There's just more drama. You know, I think preaching every weekend is not as hard as managing environments with volunteers. If the first flake of snow hit the ground, guess what? None of them can get out of the driveway. They're all stuck at home. But the kids still made it somehow, you know, and grandpa's birthday was Thursday, but we're still celebrating it on Sunday. And so we're not going to be there. And so I don't have to manage volunteers. I just have to manage cranky adults who have drama.
How long have you been doing the Pursuit of Manliness now, Jarrett?
I started it late December of 2015. So we're looking at eight years, something like that. So the podcast is probably 6 years, something.
So how's it been for you to do this initiative to try to help guys raise the bar and help guys have encouragement and community while also preaching to a congregation that, I mean, has your congregation gotten a glimpse of how you've grappled with these things? Is there a tension there with bringing this stuff up in a Sunday sermon, or how does that work?
Well, they could care less most of the time. So, I don't mean that wrong. I'll back up. When I first started doing this, it was anonymous. I just thought, man, I'm not, you know.
Okay.
So my first interview, well, actually, I opened my mouth to my wife one day. I said, I think I need to start a podcast. Now, we have no dollars. And I thought she would say, hey, we ain't got money for that. She said, do it. I thought, oh, crud. Okay. So we bought a microphone. We tried to figure it. I didn't know what I was doing. And my first guest said, the first question, he used my name. And I thought, well, I don't know how to edit. So I don't know what to do about it. So I went to the elders that day. I went to the elders meeting. I had only been on staff for a little bit, probably a month or two. And I said, hey, I want you guys to know I have this. I was a blog that I was doing. I said, I have this blog, I'm starting a podcast. It's about men. And they were like, great. Now, they're not like fully invested. They're just like, good. If that's what you right. do, God bless you. So with the church, you know, there's times that I've worked some stuff in. We have a men's retreat twice a year. I think sometimes proximity can, you know, change impact. So they see me every week, you know, they hear me every week. I had a guy say that. I took him to a men's event, he and some guys, and he's like, don't take this wrong, but we hear you every week. And I was like, I don't take it wrong, you know? So I think they know that we do this. I do this. Like I'll give you an example. There's a guy in our church, we're having a men's night, and he was talking about how he's just stinking it up as a dad. He's not leading his family in devotions. He's not whatever. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, I do this every day. This is what I do. So a week or two later, I pulled him in my office. I said, why did you never say anything? I have resources. I would love to help you. I'm not trying to promote me at all, but I'm like, doggone, like that bothers me. I'm sitting there and you know me and we have a good relationship. And he's like, I don't know. I just didn't want to bother you with it. I'm like, but it's clearly bothering you. So I still don't think we've figured out those relational waters, how to navigate that yet. Like I said, the men's retreat every year, we'll have a bunch of guys come. 75% of the people that are there do not go to our church probably. So our church guys aren't really sure what to do with that. I think it makes them uneasy and a little nervous, some of them. But I'm like, man, you guys have to also get around high caliber guys. And I hope at some point it would sharpen them to say, we need a brotherhood too. But we're not there yet.
But so it sounds like so your men's retreats – sorry, Chris.
No,
I was just going to clarify something real quick. Your men's retreats are where there's an overlap between pursuit of manliness and your role at church?
So the men's retreat's at the church, and it's not like sponsored by data, you know, or anything like that. And I've tried to keep it as neutral as possible. The church offers basically $0 for it. So everything, all the registration, people that pays for the retreat. And I wanted to keep them a little bit separate, but also bring them together. So I didn't want a budget line from the church, like, hey, we got – now they do pay for, like, the showers, you know, that they have a shower thing. But other than that, everything pretty much comes out of the pursuit of manliness. And it's not like a bait and switch to try to get guys from the church to be a part of anything that I'm doing. It's there. I don't push it on them. There are some guys that will do it. But overall, we're just trying to have a weekend of worship. And it's powerful. And I remember one of the guys from the church reached out a few weeks later and was like, we need to do a men's night like that from the guys in our church. And I'm thinking – we're not ready for it yet. The reason why that's powerful is because you got guys from all across the country coming together and just worshiping Jesus. You know, they don't care who's sitting next to them and who's, you know, and I think it just takes time. It just, and maybe like for me, those seasons of, I didn't even know that's what I needed. I think that's what's happening with some guys. God's cultivating the soil of their heart. So at some point, something's going to come from that.
It sounds to me, and obviously I haven't driven to Indy and observed you preaching and working in your church, but it sounds to me like for all the beating yourself up that you did earlier, that you've continued to be an authentic guy. I mean, you don't seem to hide things from the people in your church or others. You know, if you screw up, you tell people you screwed up, that you can do better. And that's commendable. I mean, I've had a couple of pastors, one in particular, and this was going back over 20 years. You know, he would start off his sermon by asking for prayer because, you know, he and his wife and kids had fought all the way to church, you know, and then when they got to church, they put on their smiley faces and, you know, he became the pastor and she became the pastor's wife and it all was right with the world. But he was real with us in the worship service and would say, look, this is who I am. You know, I'm your pastor, but I still struggle with these things. And in my mind, that kind of raised him. Maybe it's just because he was authentic, but it didn't diminish his leadership at all. It actually elevated him in my mind because he was authentic and a real guy. And he was a great pastor. I think that's commendable that you can do that, that you can stand up in front of people in any setting and say, look, I've got my strengths, I've got my weaknesses, and God's working on my weaknesses, and you know, and you can help me with that, and I can help you with that. I think guys need that. We need authenticity from our pastors, from our friends, from everybody. And honestly, we don't get a lot of that these days. Guys are posers. They're pretenders. They're hiding from other guys.
I think it's easier to look up to someone in the secular world who's doing man things than a Christian guy. There's, I don't know what it is. Yeah. It just seems less threatening, you know, whatever that.
All right, guys, that is all the time we have for today's interview. Make sure you come back next time to hear the rest of what Jarrett Samuels has to say about the difference between being a Christian man and a man of God. We'll investigate that more thoroughly in part two of our interview. We'll see you then, and keep living empowered.